Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Are these mythics like Chandra and Hazoret now worth dirt? It's just as exciting to see the art on these cards as it is to read what the cards actually do.
Everybody wants to play this game differently.
Brawl really, really needs to be given a chance before these major influences start crapping all over it.
Go out there and play some Magic.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay today. A little wet.
A little wet indeed. It's raining out here in Fresno. I just cleaned my pool over Easter Sunday, and it's already raining in there, and I'm feeling a little salty about that, but anyway.
I mean, at least you're not by the coast where it's really salty.
That is true. That is true. But now that we've got it up and working, we can actually use the spa. We went swimming a couple of times already, and I mean, it's the beginning of April, but it is already getting kind of warm out here, so...
Yeah. I mean, last week, I think we hit like a 90-degree day out here.
Oh, wow,
yeah. In the Bay Area.
It's been 80s for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if it actually, like, breached into 90 a minute. But, yeah, it's been really nice. Really, really nice. Before we get too deep into this, I just wanted to talk a little bit about any kind of magic we've been doing this week. Mine in particular... with the release of Masters 25 coming out very recently, a lot of prices of cards have dipped down, and I am now the proud owner, finally, of my first play set of Street Wraiths. I am so excited.
Are they foil?
I've been wanting to play like Grixis Death Shadow in Modern for the longest time, and when Street Wraiths are 10 bucks a pop, it's a little daunting. But now I was able to get an entire play set for 10 bucks, so I was very happy about that.
Yeah, it seems pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. Those and Simeon Spirit Guides are running about $250 right now, so go ahead and pick yourself up a play set if you don't have one already. And Greg, do you know where they can pick up their play sets?
I believe they can pick up their play sets at flipsidegaming.com, where you put in that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, and you get 10% off your total order.
Exactly. And all the proceeds from that promo code will help fund future show giveaways.
Like the one we're sending out now?
Yes. I finally received everyone's address. The packages are going out soon. Don't fret. We haven't forgot about you. And
I thought we totally forgot about them.
Yeah, well, you know, to all our listeners out there, each of our winners is receiving 5 cards from us. So not too shabby. You know, we like giving back to the community, and we really appreciate the feedback and the interaction. So any future giveaways we have, you know, feel free to contribute. You might win something cool. So, all right, without further ado, why don't we make haste to Lore Corner.
So last time we left the story, well, a Johnny showed up. And there was a long story between Tiana the Angel and Arvad the Vampire. And they didn't want to talk about it yet until now.
Right.
Where do we start on this story today?
Well, before we get to Arvad, we get to look deep into the history and origins of Tiana the Angel.
Wait, how old is she? She's like 2 years old, isn't she? Based on all this, it looks like she literally was brought into her right... a couple years ago by Lyra Dawnbringer, and the Cabal was already running rampant. So it couldn't have been too long, but she was born full-fledged angel with all the memories and the things and information about the Church of Sarah.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I thought when it was referencing the Cathedral of Sarah for a second, it was talking about before the actual plane had collapsed. But no, there is just a cathedral to honor Sarah.
I think they were talking about Lyra there.
Okay.
Because Lyra Dawnbringer was originally in the plane of Sarah's Sanctum, but she was one of the last ones out before it got condensed into the Power Stone.
Okay. Gotcha. That makes sense. Okay. So Tiana's history starts with her being created for a purpose. She was prayed for by some mortals who needed a guardian. And so she kind of gains her consciousness. You know, angels aren't necessarily born like humans. They are, when they're born, they come with a purpose.
Yeah.
And Tiana was oh so excited about diving into battle and you know, fighting against darkness and evil and doing everything that Rhea Dawnbringer, or that Lyra Dawnbringer does. But unfortunately, there were other plans for Tiana. And Lyra says, you are to go and guard something very important for these mortals. And Tiana's like, surely it's something that's, you know, battle wrought and very dangerous. You know, okay, what is it that I have to go guard? And Lyra says, it's a complicated irrigation system. And Tiana's kind of just trying to bite her lip, going, okay, yeah, this is probably the most amazing irrigation system ever. My life has purpose. I'm an important angel. And she's just kind of at odds with her own feelings about her assignment. And she was told that the mortals, you know, who created this structure were praying for a protector. So, you know, she knows it must be very important. This is obviously, you know, my calling, my duty. I'm just going to suck it up. I'm just going to do it. And so after she agreed, she says, yes, let's go. Lyra's like, all right, cool. She was a little worried at first that, you know, Tiana might be a little offended at her role. Now, but Tiana took it all in stride.
Other reason why that she was worried, though.
What's that?
There's another reason.
What's that?
Her creation took a lot longer than any other guardian angel had ever had. Matter of fact, it was probably one of the longest they'd ever seen. I mean, it took a few months to make her. I mean, it gets to the point now that they're on their way. She's gotten her weapon. Her and Lyra Dawnbringer are heading to this great irrigation system. And on the way there, they're talking about her creation. And while she's getting the weapon, she talks to one of the human clerics there in the Church of Sarah and about how it took so much longer for her to be created and how that was actually kind of weird. And it's kind of interesting to think about this. I mean, we're used to humans taking 9 months to create, and then you're born, and then you got another 18 years before you're really ready to be functioning, right? But 3 months, I mean, I don't know if that's what it said here, but it just, it took longer. And it felt weird. So they end up going, Lyra and an escort of angels go to the irrigation system, and, well, they see smoke. And, I mean, the first thing they say, oh, well, that's a common thing. There's always smoke. And then they get closer. There's a lot of smoke. And, well, they were late. The entire town had been destroyed. No irrigation system for her to protect. Nothing. And she's kind of turns to Lyra and's like, now what do I do? I have nothing to guard. And she kind of has a crisis of faith during this time. And what we next see her is back on the Weatherlight Restoration Project, where she's working with Hottie. Haiti? Hottie?
Hottie, yes.
Hottie, okay. And they're under the decks, and they were kind of talking about this, and Hottie kind of asks her, I've never come across an angel like you where they know so much about technical things. And Tiana's like, I don't know. I just get the information. It's like Sarah's giving it to me every time. And they kind of talk about it a little bit. And no real resolution. As they all call it a day, they get up and they're like, oh, we worked late. But because of you, we're ahead of schedule. Which is good. I mean, it's always good to be ahead of schedule. Then it's time for the night. And as angels are, they don't need to sleep. They don't need to eat. Although the smells were mighty good coming from the camp, so she wished she had a system to eat food. Of course, she doesn't get to eat food because that's just not how she is. So, on her guard, late in the night, a person, a lone person, is seen in the distance. And I mean, we're talking, this is almost middle of the night. There's a couple of people awake and her. And she's looking and she can't really see much of the person. It's just she decides to go up and fly up above and overlook. Well, she gets above. She sees the armor of a Benelish knight, tattered cloak. I mean, it definitely looked like it had been a long-traveled person. While she was soaring up above, looking down on the man, scoping it out, the man stops and looks right back at her, as if he had just as good night vision as her. And, of course, this seems a little weird to Tiana. So she decides to fly down there and approach him. And...
I'm sorry, I'm just jumping in here. I love this line. When she, like you said, she notices that he's dressed as a Benelish knight, but upon closer inspection, Tiana notices that this man is a vampire.
Yeah.
And so Tiana lifted her spear and said, quote, "I see you're a vampire. Sorry about that. Any last words?"
He then lifts his hands up, palms out. Angel of Sarah, bowing deeply. "I swear on Sarah, I haven't come here to harm anyone." "Haven't you?" Tiana asks. It might be more accurate to say, "Who were you?" But that also seemed like adding insult to injury. And this is where he announces that he's Arvod, Knight of Benalia, and that he was captured and made a vampire. He's tried not to harm anyone, and mostly succeeded. So, of course, Tiana's now questioning... mostly? So Arvod goes into details about the fact that the only blood that he's drank since the time that he was transformed by the Sangare bloodline is he only sucks the blood of the Cabal clerics.
Well, that's good.
And, of course, I mean, it's still sucking blood and killing people, but they are the evil guys. So I guess in about, they're kind of like the Inquisition. And they're just fine. So they kind of have this conversation. And he talks about how a couple months ago, he just got this feeling that he had to come here. After raiding a Cabal group, he takes a ship and he sails here to Bagardia. And he's been traveling. I mean, it's been 2 months now. And... he feels less vampiric. And
yep.
At this time, she's kind of said, okay, well, let's see where you're going. I'm going to watch you. If you do anything to harm anybody, I'm going to gut you. And he's like, okay, no problem. I understand. I am a vampire. I can't blame you. Which is completely just so much different than any other vampire you've ever come across, especially here on Dominaria.
Yeah. Oh, you have to go through that last... back and forth of dialogue. It's pretty hilarious.
Are we talking about...
just before the end of this section. When, right after she says, if you touch anyone here, I'll gut you like a fish. And Arvod says, that probably won't kill me. And Tiana says...
oh, yeah.
And then he was certainly honest. And Tiana said, I'll come up with something. And Arvod said, that's fair.
That's fair.
And started forward.
That was a really good like back and forth there.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Tiana takes Arvod to the Power Stone, thinking that it could cure him because, I mean, he feels less. And they leave him there for a little while. Nothing really changes, but she does ask him, think you could show us your, she points to her mouth, you know. Arvod's brows quirked as the weirdness of their crest, but he opened his mouth to reveal his fangs. And Tiana looks definitely smaller. Haughty agreed. So it's obvious to see that the Power Stone does have a positive effect on vampires.
Right.
Who knew? And, well, with this, they kind of step aside and they're like, Arvod, we need to think about this and talk. So she goes to the group, everybody in the camp, and talks to them. And they say he can stay. He doesn't have to leave yet. We got to see if this will help you, honestly. And he was definitely surprised. I mean, he wasn't told by humans to get out, which is just one of the best courtesies he's ever seen as a vampire he is now. So while he's out there, he's trying to do normal things, help out the camp. So he goes fishing. And Tiana gets told to go fishing, too. And they kind of have a heart-to-heart out there. And one of the things they notice on the hole is a dark spot, some fungus. And that's where she mentions that Joyra went to Molimo to get a new seed to grow the hole. And Arvad asks, wait, Joyra? You can't be talking about that Joyra. And Tiana goes, yes, that Joyra. And they are all true. It was a pretty cool part.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool. So, and there's something that he says. So Arvad seems surprised. I didn't think you were a battle angel. I thought you were an artificer angel. And Tiana's like, no, there aren't any artificer angels. But you're the one directing all the work. He tapped his ear. There are a few good things about my condition, but the improvement in my sight and hearing is one of them. Well, I don't have any official angel skills. I'm not supposed to be working on the engines, but I just... Tiana waved her hands, trying to explain it. Sarah is giving me the knowledge of where things are supposed to go. I can see how everything is supposed to work. Well, if Sarah is giving you that knowledge, then it's an official angel skill, says Arvad. So this is where she's kind of turning the page, and she's starting to think about, well, maybe I am still supposed to be a guardian angel, but the irrigation system wasn't what I was supposed to guard.
Right.
So as we continue... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, yeah. So she was definitely beginning her being assigned to guard a great machine. And as Arvad tells her, the Weatherlight is a great machine. She begins to have this, change of consciousness where she's all of a sudden accepting the fact that she has some purpose, but she's still a little wary. But... in this next scene, once again, it's an afternoon, and they were talking about the Weatherlight and, different pieces of it. All of a sudden, out in the distance, they see some flames shoot up, and someone shouts, "Was that a volcano?" "No, it's worse," Tiana said. "Everyone run and take cover." A gigantic phoenix was soaring through the air. About twice, its wingspan about twice as big, or several times as big as Tiana's, it starts barreling towards the Weatherlight as well as all those in the encampment. And this feeling just grips Tiana, and it's a feeling of, I must protect the Weatherlight. I must protect these people. I must destroy this phoenix. So she takes flight, and she prays to Sarah to give her strength. And she sees her blade begin to glow with power as she starts to charge at this phoenix. So the phoenix sort of dives over to the side, attacking her with its claws, getting a hit in here and there, singeing her wings. And the thought of her wings burning off really kind of gave her a scare, but not enough to deter her from fighting this phoenix. But with this dodge, the phoenix passed her and is now heading straight for the encampment and the Weatherlight. And she's thinking, oh my God, no, I have to keep protecting this. And then she sees arrows begin to fly through the sky and pierce the phoenix. And it burns one of the arrows off of itself as it continues, but more arrows come and start to pelt the phoenix. And she notices it's Arvad. And he's shooting at this phoenix from the encampment, instructing these people to flee. And it just gives Tiana this sense of, courage and even more purpose to defend these people. And so she soars and drives her sword straight into this phoenix. So she pushes this phoenix with her sword in it out to the ocean in order to make sure that it doesn't harm the Weatherlight or anyone else in the camp. Mm-hmm. So finally, this phoenix sort of slumps down into the ocean and she returns to the encampment. And she's contemplating, she's saying, gosh, this Arvad, he could have easily just killed and drank the blood of the people in this encampment. He could have stolen the Power Stone and fled, but he chose to stand and fight and defend and help. This is something special.
Well, at this point now, she talks to everybody. She finds, she talks to Arvad, and in talking, she's like, I'm surprised you didn't do anything malicious, pretty much, and notices that his cloak is tattered and burned. And, I mean, she thinks back to her wounds, and she's like, oh, but I'm an angel. I just healed. And then one of the camp members came up and said, Arvad saved us. He helped us out of a burning tent, and that's why he was burnt. And it was at this point that Arvad told Tiana that he wants to serve on the Weatherlight. And Tiana's like, well, let's have you here until Joyra. And I'm going to join too. I'll be a crew of the Weatherlight.
And then just to kind of go back, there was a moment during the story where she was even questioning whether or not she wanted to continue on with the Weatherlight because, again, she was uncertain of her purpose in life. But with this sort of, you know, with this whole interaction of Sarah teaching her how to care for the Weatherlight, the inherent urge for her to want to defend the crew and the ship, as well as Sarah granting her power through her sword to defeat this phoenix, yeah, she definitely gets a new sense of purpose and feels very, very good about herself and her position with the Weatherlight and its crew. So we get to see a little bit more of how this crew is brewing up, and now we know a little bit more about Arvad and how he came to know Tiana, and now that Joyra has returned, we have a Johnny. The crew is definitely taking shape, so, you know, and this is the fourth chapter. We are a third of the way done with the Dominaria story. So just, you know, again, looking ahead to seeing when Jace gets here with Gideon and Jaya, it's all going to come together soon. Absolutely cannot wait to see how it all goes down.
Oh, I'm excited. I am so excited. Oh, so with that, our Lore's Corner shall close the book.
Yes,
as Separatian Empires is closing exactly. Book so far. We will get back to them next week.
Yes, as we turn the page, we're gonna leave. We're gonna leave Lore Corner, and we have quite a few new fun things to talk about in our news and announcements section. So let's head on over to As Foretold. So we had two products release between now and the last time we talked to you. We have the release of the Challenger decks as well as the last duel deck.
Yeah, the very last one, which I went and picked it up because I couldn't resist.
Oh, nice. Why don't we start there then? Let's talk about the duel deck, Elves versus Inventors.
So one of the coolest things about this is the first time we get to see that new legendary frame.
Yes.
And we get that in the form of Azuri, Yeva, Dwinin, Kira, and Pia Nalar. Yeah.
Nice.
And I'll tell you, they look really good. The foiling on that Azuri looks good. It's a strong deck. It's worth playing. It doesn't have like your Priest Titania and some of the other cards you really want to be playing with, but you know what? It's still a strong deck.
Yeah.
Of course, that Inventor's deck coming with a Solemn and a Dark Steel Plate.
Wow, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I want to say Dark Steel Plate originally from Mirrodin Besieged, and also saw a Commander reprint, I believe.
Yep.
But not too many of those out there, so that's definitely a great card to grab, especially if you're into playing that EDH format.
Whoa. It's called Commander.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, it's called Commander. And these aren't spoilers, they're previews. And,
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we have that.
It's all good.
Yeah, we have that dual deck coming out. But then, ladies and gentlemen, we have the first ever run of Challenger decks. Greg, is the sky falling? Are these mythics like Chandra and Hazoret now worth dirt? Like, what is going on?
I mean, if you're in California, the sky is falling, but it's coming down in the form of rain.
Oh.
Otherwise, God, no. Everything that's getting printed here is just fine. It's not taking a plunge in the standard market. Now, once we get out of standard, will these take a plunge more so than normal? Probably.
Right.
But in the time now in standard, having more cards is always fine. We only really see those plunges when we're talking about modern and legacy, and mostly modern.
And with there's been a lot of focus on this big red deck because a lot of people looking at Hazoret and Chandra as, oh my gosh, with these cards being printed in this pre-construction deck, these prices are going to tank. It's terrible. Well, Greg, these two cards also have been seeing slight play in Modern. I mean, yes. Hazoret showing up in Affinity, that's kind of crazy. As well as Chandra showing up in some burn decks, among other things. I mean, these cards are going to survive the test of time. As well as Chandra probably sees some good play in other formats like EDH and maybe even Legacy. I'm not 100% sure. But
I don't know about Legacy. It's not a Jason Mind Sculptor.
Right. But I mean, with these other decks, you've got the Snake Counters deck, you've got the Approach deck. Some of those cards might not necessarily... I mean, there wasn't much, I guess, value in there.
I mean, Walking Ballista is still maintaining.
Yeah, Walking Ballista, again, another card that sees play in multiple formats. But again, those prices were already pretty firmly situated before the printing of these Challenger decks. So with the release of these, I really don't see much problem with the actual price point of these cards. I think everything is going to be just fine.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I don't think there's much fret or worry or pomp and circumstance to being fearful of what will happen to your card value.
Exactly. I mean, sure, in a few months we're going to have some of these cards rotate out, but if you want to pay, what is it, 30 or 40 bucks to get a deck to go and play at your F&M and play and be confident that you are going to be able to win some games, that's great. I mean, that definitely seems more than worth it. And I think that it's a great opportunity, a great avenue for newer players to jump into a more competitive scene rather than just picking up packs, making decks casually at your kitchen table, and playing with your friends.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
So, we are in spoilers season. Since we're talking about Challenger decks, we're talking about the lore, there's so much new story, we have new cards being spoiled every week. And I know we got that huge spoiler with all the cards and not much of the art, and there's just so much good stuff. There's only a few that we really have time to touch on, though. So, of course, last Friday we got Karn's Temporal Sundering. We didn't get much over the weekend. But cards to make note of is we got Weatherlight.
We did. It's a vehicle. It's official.
It's a Crew 3. Joyra can captain it.
Yeah.
And the ability is actually really strong. The ability, when it deals combat damage to a player, you look at the top 5 cards of your library and reveal a historic card from among them and put it in your hand. Remember, that is artifacts, legendaries, and sagas.
Yes.
So much good
there.
Oh,
yeah.
And we got all sorts of other good stuff. I think one of the stronger ones came from the third, and that was Tat Yova, the Benthic Druid. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I did. Why don't you tell us about Tat Yova? It's an uncommon, too.
It's an uncommon legend, so it's 3 generic green-blue legendary creature, Morfolk Druid. It's a 3/3, and it says, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, not only do you gain 1 life, you also draw a card. So it's a little bit of Chorister, a little bit of Horn of Greed. It just feels strong. I mean, sure, it's a 5-drop, but it does what you want to do.
Yep.
So strong.
Oh, yeah.
And then you remember that creature that we talked about in the flavor text, Naban?
Yes.
You want to tell us about this dude?
Sure. We have Naban, Dean of Iteration. He is a rare. So for 1 and a blue, you get a human wizard, 2/1, that says, if a wizard entering the battlefield under your control causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So
is that like Panharmonicon or, I don't know, Purphoros?
Yeah. Now, my question to you is, if you have Naban out, right?
Uh-huh.
And you were to cast a Snapcaster Mage, the ability on Snapcaster Mage giving a card in your graveyard flashback is the ability of a permanent you control, right?
I mean, yeah, it's also a wizard. So
there you go. So, yeah, I mean, this basically...
I want to say yeah.
I think it does. This probably will double up your Snapcaster Mage enter the battlefield triggered abilities. Absolutely.
Wow, that's really strong.
Yeah. I mean, Anything else like, I don't know. Let's just say Warstorm Surge, for example. You know, you want to play a wizard, deals that damage with Warstorm Surge equal to that creature's power, you get to do it again.
Yeah. And I mean, I mostly want to talk about cards we didn't see in that original leak. I don't believe Yawgmoth's Vile Offering was in there.
I don't think so either. Why don't you tell us about Yawgmoth's Vile Offering?
So this is legendary sorcery, and it's a 4 generic and a black. And what it says is put up to one target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. Then destroy up to one target creature or planeswalker and exile Yawgmoth's Vile Offering.
There you go.
Wait. Does that mean I get to steal my opponent's Ugin?
Absolutely.
Karn?
Yup.
And then exile their Karn?
Oh, heck yeah.
That just sounds good.
Absolutely.
It really does. I'm pretty excited for a lot of these cards.
Oh, yeah. Now, going in accordance with the let's talk about cards we haven't seen in the spoiler before, I don't think we've actually talked about this one yet. But if you are a commander, thank you, player, not unlike ourselves, and you like Sultai, have we got a commander for you?
Oh, God, this thing is busted.
This thing is insane. It's called Moldrotha the Gravetide. It's 3 black, green, blue for a 6/6 legendary elemental avatar. During each of your turns, you may play up to one permanent card of each permanent type from your graveyard. If a card has multiple permanent types, choose one as you play it. I mean, this is so many things all stapled together into one insane legendary creature.
I mean,
permanents include lands. So you basically have a Crucible of Worlds. You have the ability to play creatures from your graveyard. You can play artifacts,
Yawgmoth's Will,
enchantments. You can play planeswalker cards from your graveyard. I mean, this is insane. I mean, it's so good. I mean, obviously, you know, we're going to talk about Brawl later, and this would be pretty cool. But, I mean, just think of the possibilities throughout the course of Magic's history. And you can play it multiple times. And if they die and go to the graveyard, you can play it again. It's so crazy. And plus, if you're able to blink this thing with like Deadeye Navigator or something, you can do it again.
Yeah. This is pretty sweet. But remember, you still have to cast it.
Right.
You still have to pay for it to cast a spell, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's still great. I'm excited.
Absolutely. Yep. I think that this card is definitely going to be a commander's dream come true to brew with. Yeah. And we'll be seeing a lot of this card in the near future. So, all right, what do we got next?
So we're going to go to April 4th. I don't know. We've got the Memorial lands. Those are all cool because they're all they're non-basic lands. And they each have a memorial to certain characters in the lore of Dominaria. So you got the Memorial to Unity, which taps to add green and looks for lands or creature cards. Creature cards from top of your deck by sacrificing it with a memorial to Raphelos. The Memorial to Glory, which puts out 2/1/1 white soldiers by sacrificing it to Gerard. Memorial to Genius, which is to Urza, which draws you 2 cards. The Memorial to Folly, which is Gerard and Urza in the pits, which makes somebody, you get to return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. And then the Memorial to War, which allows you to destroy a land.
Is that Corona?
That is Corona.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cute.
That's pretty sweet, yeah.
I will be happy to see any of these in foil, honestly, because, sure, they enter the battlefield tapped, but they do things.
Yeah. Speaking of cute, did you see the art on Divest, our new one-drop black hand disruption spell?
Yeah.
So we get 1 black sorcery. Target player reveals their hand. You choose an artifact or creature card from it. That player discards that card. This seems extremely powerful. I think
it really does.
Yeah. Blue-black control has already been very, very strong. I mean, duress is definitely very powerful. But in a standard meta where you're going to see a lot of creatures with this push of legendary creatures and types and stuff like that, Divest could probably do a lot of work for you. Now, obviously, it doesn't hit planeswalkers, instant sorceries, and the like, but the ability to make your opponent discard their card that was probably the plan of keeping their hand all along seems pretty strong. So, yeah. I think, and plus, this picture, it shows a flitter sprite referenced in the flavor text. It says, flitter sprites collect unusually valuable things, coins of fallen empires, baby teeth, and memories of treasured names. That's pretty cool.
And then did you see that sweet, sweet reprint?
Of?
Gilded Lotus.
Yes. Oh,
there's another $12 card that's getting reprinted, which is exactly what every Commander player has ever really wanted.
Yes, definitely. And again, the art is just so awesome. Among the lily pads, you have this bright Gilded Lotus here. It looks so good. I'm sure the foil of this card is going to be absolutely amazing.
Oh, God. It will be. So we're going to move on to the next day. We have some cards we already talked about. But the one that we did contemplate, we wanted to know what this actually was, the card Eldest Reborn.
Yes.
It was, in fact, based solely about Nicol Bolas.
Yes. Oh,
so
yes.
So that art is so cool.
It is.
Oh, by the way, have you seen the table mats for Dominaria?
No, I have not.
It's the Weatherlight.
Wow.
Yeah, 2x6 table mat is just the Weatherlight. It is so cool.
And did you see the very bottom of this saga card, the Eldest Reborn? And are you're familiar with Plane Chase as well, right?
Oh, is that possibly the Talon Gates?
That is the Talon Gates. I mean, this whole set is just dripping with flavor. I absolutely love it.
Well, what about the Primeval's Glorious Rebirth?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
With Daragaz in the front, and then the other four dragons. So there's Trevor the Renewer, Dromar the Banisher, Krosis the Purger, Daragaz the Igniter, and Rith the Awakener, which we have already seen Daragaz reignited.
Yes. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Then there's also some other cards as we move on to the next one. Personally, these new checklands is what they're being called.
Mm-hmm.
The art on them are amazing. Personal favorite is definitely the Hinterland Harbor, which is a town that sprung up from the ruined corpse of a Phyrexian planar portal.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this thing looks amazing. I cannot wait to get one in foil. I want it so badly, so badly.
Oh, man. Okay, so just talking about art, I want to take one step back here.
There's no steps back.
And talk about Naru Meha, Master Wizard.
Isn't that so good?
For 2BB, you get a 3/3 legendary human wizard with flash. When Naru Meha, Master Wizard, enters the battlefield, copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Other wizards you control get +1/+1. Now, I wanted to tell you about the art on here, because there are a lot of prominent figureheads in Magic's history depicted in this art. Obviously, with the title Master Wizard, looking into the back, I got to assume that you got Teferi in there. One of them is Joda. One of them is probably Jaya. And
could we possibly have Chancellor Rain in there too?
I said we might. I was even wondering so far. I mean, given the concept of time, could one of those be Urza?
No.
No? Okay.
No. None of those are Urza. Sorry.
Okay. But yeah, some very.
If Urza was live, the Cabal wouldn't be kicking.
Okay. But yeah, still, I mean, just call outs to the art here. There's just so much in terms of, you know, what is actually represented on the art. And I love that Wizards is still going through with the normal preview season, because it's just as exciting to see the art on these cards as it is to read what the cards actually do. So kudos to them for continuing along with it.
Did you see Elf Mom?
Elf Mom.
Marwyn.
Oh,
the
Marwyn.
Nurturer.
I was literally looking for a card called Eltmon. No, tell us about Elf Mom, please. please.
So Marwyn the Nurturer is a 3-drop 1/1 legendary creature elf druid. If you look at the art, it is a elf with a baby on her chest.
So it's a mom.
And she's a mom. Yeah. It's elf mom. Okay. And she gets a +1/+1 counter whenever another elf enters the battlefield under your control. Doesn't say card. It says elf. Doesn't say cast. It says battlefield. So, yes, your Rith the Redeemed puts out elf warriors.
Yep.
Your Imperious Perfect puts out elf warriors.
Yep.
Any of those cards that put out tokens gets bigger. And then she taps to add an amount of green equal to her power.
Oh, yeah.
Bleh. Viridian Joiner, eat your heart out.
Yeah, that's just going to get nuts, especially with Land War Elves being pretty. You know that there's going to be some serious elf decks floating around Standard.
And oh, yeah. Totally.
Elf Mom here is going to make go.
Rishkar is going to get run in those decks too, you know.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. No, there's a couple elves that are still floating around Standard that are going to do a lot of work.
So oh, yeah.
You can definitely expect to see that.
And I think we got two more cards here we want to talk about before we go on to our next area, right?
Sure, but I wanted to talk about this one. The graphic itself is in Spanish, but when you read it, the English translation, this is just so cool, and especially the art is amazing. This is Rite of Belzenlok. So for 2BB, you get a Saga enchantment. Chapters 1 and 2 say, create 2/0/1 black cleric creature tokens. Chapter 3 says, create a 6/6 black demon creature token with flying, trample, and at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice another creature. If you don't, this creature deals 6 damage to you. So over the course of the first 2 turns, it gives you enough fodder to support this demon for 4 full turns before it starts doing damage to you. And that's not to say that you're not pumping out other tokens. We do have a black-white tokens deck floating around Standard right now.
We do.
For 4 mana, you're going to be getting a 6/6 creature, you know, and this is just... this is so cool. I think this is amazing. And especially if you want to use that counter manipulation to give yourself more of these black cleric creature tokens. I mean, not that really want to. You kind of want to get to that demon. But, yeah.
I mean, this Anointed Procession with this gives you 2 demons.
It would. Then you have to sacrifice 2 creatures. But still, that's 12 power on the board of flying and trample. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, you should be winning relatively quick like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, also you look at the art and you've got the representation of Belzenlok at the top, and then you've got your cleric as well as a bunch of other skulls kind of chanting or praying. It's
I think those are the clerics that died.
Oh, the clerics that died, gotcha.
I mean, if you remember some of the older demons from Dominaria required 6 things to die to summon the demon. Specifically, the Shadowborn Apostles.
The Shadowborn Apostles, right, right.
So it could be a throwback to those exactly.
Yeah, yeah, definitely could be. But yeah, 4 mana for the potential of pulling out that 6/6 creature is very, very strong. I think this is going to be a really good card. Okay, what was the next one you wanted to do?
Well, I think this is going to be possibly one of my favorite cards. It is Josu Vess, Lich Knight. He's a 2 generic black legendary creature zombie knight, which is a 4/5 menace. He has kicker for 5 generic and a black. So yes, that is correct. If you pay 10 for him, not only do you get a 4/5 menace, you get 8. That's right, 8 2/2 black zombie knight creature tokens with menace.
That's brutal.
I mean, that's 9 dudes on the board that have menace.
Yeah.
That's lethal.
Oh, yeah. For the low, low cost of, what is that?
10 mana.
10 mana? Man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If only there was a way to get that much black mana. Oh, wait. We have one more card to talk about. Wait, did you want to talk about Josu anymore?
No.
Okay.
You've got it.
All right, well. This may be a way for you to produce all that black mana. Hopefully you're playing a mono black deck and you got a bunch of swamps out, because Cabal Stronghold is a new land that can tap to add colorless, or you tap 3, Tap Cabal Stronghold. Add black for each basic swamp you control. So, yeah. Let's just say you've got about five other swamps out and you play Cabal Stronghold. So you tap three, tap it, add five to your mana pool, tap the other two. That's seven. I mean, this thing can just get out of control fast, but you need to be playing that mono black deck to take full advantage of this. Unless, let's say, in a commander game, there was another land that could turn all lands into swamps.
Yeah, but remember, if you've got like a Valakut out and it's turned into a swamp, it won't count towards this Cabal Stronghold.
Oh, that's right. It's basic swamps. Never mind.
Basic swamps.
Right.
But you know what's really crazy about this card?
What's that?
It's standard legal.
It is standard legal. Yep. Oh.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I think that just hit, didn't it?
Yeah. No, this is...
Yeah, yeah.
There might be a Gonti or two getting cast with this thing coming up here pretty soon. I mean, mono black can really, really get out of control, especially when it has this much mana.
Oh, yeah. So, with that being said, I think there's the other art on the Antiquities War is really cool, but I don't think we need to talk about it too much here because I think we need to move into the brews.
Yeah, we do. We do, we do. Now, there is a GP going on this weekend. In fact, there's two. They're both in Seattle. So the first GP that is currently going on today, Friday, is a Legacy GP. And, man, I tell you what, I watched the first round of coverage what was it? It was a Death and Taxes deck versus I forget if it was a Grixis or a four-color deck. The first game went about 58 minutes, and it was just really back and forth. Now, that's not to say it wasn't fun to watch. So many different decisions and, you know, trying to get around certain situations. But, I mean, Legacy is a whole nother animal. And unfortunately, I don't have too much experience with it, but it's definitely fun to watch and see these people kind of do what they do. But never fear, if Legacy is not your thing, there is a standard GP coming up that starts, I believe, tomorrow. So yes. We get a double dose of GPs out of Seattle. So look forward to that this weekend. Let's move on here. There's some stuff that we want to talk about a new format that's been introduced very recently. Let's head on into the Brewmaster's Lair.
Just pour me up another drink, man.
Yep. Hey, Greg.
Yes.
If someone, you know, told you that you should jump off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge?
I mean, if there was a safety net below me, maybe.
Point being.
No, I definitely would not jump off that bridge.
Okay. Point being, there is a brand new format that was introduced that was backed by Wizards, and this format was called Brawl. And we talked about it in an earlier episode. I know that, Greg, you and I have been very excited about the potential of brewing Brawl decks and playing this brand new format. It seems pretty exciting, right?
It looks good. I mean, I talked about this before. It's a great entry point. And for people that buy standard and don't play, like they play the one or two decks, this gives you a lot of different play with those new cards you just bought.
Right. Right. Now, here's my problem, and this is a problem that is going to persist regardless of how much I beat my drum over here on our little podcast. So lots of people subscribe to large, big-name content producers, Magic content producers, okay? Hence the whole, if you jump off a bridge, would you do it too thing. If one of these content producers does not like Brawl and this sort of behavior and practice becomes sort of viral, well, what do you think people who listen to them are going to say and do? They're probably going to say, oh, you know what? You're right. This format is something I should not even consider because it rotates, or because it's a singleton format, or because it's only standard. all these reasons why you should not consider playing Brawl, in my opinion, is absolute garbage. You know, I get on Twitter and I see other big, and I'm talking big time, content producers just throwing shade on this format. I'm like, bro, who are you to say that this format isn't what people should be doing? I mean, okay, you're invested in your format. I get it. All right, this is a little different, but for, you know, Johnny on the spot here, who walks into a card store, maybe he likes playing games like Risk, very complicated, larger games, but, you know, he doesn't have that much money. Well, guess what? You can play a 60-card singleton format with a commander that likes, you know, multiplayer big game style without having to spend that much money, you know? And let me tell you, it's very disheartening. When you go into an LGS, sometimes that's the only place you can go to play Commander. And you sit down across the table and someone throws out these dual lands or Chains of Mephistopheles or Tabernacle at Pendril Vale. And you're like, oh, that's cool.
What about cards like Invoke Prejudice?
Or Invoke Prejudice. Okay, I own that. Yeah. And but anyway, it's very daunting, almost depressing, you know, to say, hey, that's cool. How much are these cards? Oh, a couple $1,000 just for these cards here. It's like, ugh, that might turn some people off of the format and say, you know what? I can never compete. I can't afford that. Maybe I better go play a different game. Well, now we have a format that doesn't cost that much to get into. You know, it's just as casual or competitive as Commander. I mean, you know, to say that Commander is just a strictly casual format is ridiculous. I think that this format of Brawl really, really needs to be given a chance before these major influences start crapping all over it. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It really is. I mean, I'm totally on board with you. Major content providers, if you hear us, there's no reason to put shade on anything. If Wizards comes up with a new idea, why would you want to shoot it down? I mean, honestly, there's no reason to. And everybody wants to play this game differently. Not everybody's as inventive as others to try something new. And this is a great way to let people try something new.
Right. And it's kind of hypocritical if you get on, you know, your own content producing medium and you say, oh, have you read Twitch chat? It's toxic. Or, oh, these players who come into LGS, and if they're bad people around bad players, you know, don't be around them, blah, blah, blah. Don't avoid their influence, you know. Well, what you may forget is that you influence millions of people. And the fact, if you say something's bad, chances are they're going to go right along with you and say it's bad too. So for the love of the game and diversity and inclusion, please don't just go out and say the bad things about this format. Heck, I challenge you, anyone out there, regardless of how prominent you are in the Magic the Gathering community, I challenge you for 2 months to get behind Brawl and see what happens, honestly, because there is such a wide array of players out there that this is going to hit home for a bunch of them. And it'd be better for everybody if you just stop talking trash and start saying, hey, you know what? Here's what we can do, you know, and not, well, Definitely. here's a restriction, so I don't like it. You should play this instead. Restriction breeds creativity. I've heard almost everybody say that. So why not get creative and actually take a stab at playing this format the way it was meant to be played? You know? I mean, come on.
All right. So with that being said, I don't think we need to delve a little bit more into this rant.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've been brewing a deck, and I think I'm excited for this because I made Kamena Merfolk.
Ooh,
but,
nice.
I'm throwing it up a little, running Force Adaptation to make things like Nezahal and Galta.
Oh my god, Dinosaur Merfolk? What?
Yeah. And you know what? I think it does stuff. I mean, there's not a lot of Wrath in those colors, but there is like this 6-drop sorcery that puts 2/1/1 counters on every creature you control.
Yup.
I mean, that does stuff with Rishkar, right?
Absolutely. I mean, talk about mana
production. There's
just
all sorts of like interesting things that I can do. The only thing I'm missing right now is my walking ballista.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Walking ballista just does so much.
I had the idea for my next brawl deck. I mean, as you know, I'm getting a case of Dominaria.
Ooh, nice.
I was thinking Joda Five Color Legends.
Yes, I like
it. And just build the entire crew. I mean, Arvod giving +2/+2 to all legends, and then you got Joyra drawing you cards. I can't say no.
I think that that's a great idea. I mean, Joda Legends is such a flavor win. That sounds like it would be so much fun, not only to play, but to just watch happen and sort of see the story unfold as the game goes on.
I'm excited to try this out. And I mean, I've got all those five tap lands that are both the basic land types, and then we got the 10 check lands. Oh, it's all there.
Nice.
It really just is. And I get to play with things like Zakama in there. I mean, cast Zakama for 5 and untap 9 lands.
Yep.
Does this feel good? Is it good when Zakama is a 11-11?
Oh, yeah. And not to mention, you're probably running a couple of those flip lands in there, too. I mean, there was a couple of them that will produce obscene amounts of mana. And if you can untap those after emptying them into your, you know, mana pool. Oh, sorry. We can't say mana pool anymore. But if you tap them for tons of mana and then use the comma to untap them again, that walking ballista is going to be so juicy.
Or any number of things. I'm excited to make a deck for this because having that limited makes it so I can do a lot of stuff, but there's also not a lot. I will have to get a Scarab God, though.
Ooh, yeah. Well, they are coming down in price. I think they're below $30 now, and I know that's no, you know, small order, but that's always good to see.
I don't know if you've seen the price on a Gauntlet of Might. I picked one of those up some years back for like $60. They're like $400 now.
Oh, is that the one that's just the red?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
talk about weird things. Anyhow, you were building a deck too, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about restrictions. I could not help myself but try to build a Karn Brawl deck. Now, I know that you might think it's going to be really hard because with the restriction of the land base, it's not going to be easy to find lands that produce colorless mana that don't also produce a different color. So after doing a little bit of digging, and including cards like Zalfir and Void from Dominaria, you're going to be getting 19 straight-up lands that will produce colorless mana. And that seems like not that much, but hear me out. Here's my pitch. There's also a lot of 3-drop mana rocks in Standard that you're going to be able to get to. You know, if you draw your hand and you only have 2 lands, you have about 3 turns to draw your 3rd land, and then you hopefully have another, you know, mana rock in there. And again, this is all just to try to make Karn even possible. Okay, so with all these different lands, and by lands that do this, I'm including things like Spire of Industry, which is considered a multicolor land, but it also taps for the colorless, just like Aether Hub. All the deserts, you know, Sunscorched Desert, among other ones. But anyway, Karn being a 4-drop planeswalker means as soon as you get that 3-drop mana rock out, you can cast him the next turn and then start drawing cards or start making those artifact creatures. And in this deck, you're running almost entirely on artifacts. So the moment you create one of those artifact creatures, it's going to be a 3-3 or a 4-4 very, very quickly. And you can make 2 of them before you gotta, you know, send Karn, you know, back up one. But either way, just a couple cards of note here, aside from the mana rocks that are gonna help you out. One card that I was particularly excited about was, where is it here? Inspiring Statuary. Karn is a colorless planeswalker. Inspiring Statuary says you can tap your artifacts to help you cast spells, non-artifact spells. So you'll be using Karn. He'll probably be dying, but with your plethora of artifacts you'll have out, you're going to be able to cast Karn relatively easily whenever you want. So
yeah,
if your sole purpose is producing artifact creatures with him, guess what? You can tap those to help cast Karn later on in the game if you're not using him to attack. also other cards that are pretty interesting. Gonti's Aether Heart. You're going to be a little slow running, you know, one drop land. Now, obviously, there's no Sol Ring, there's no Mana Vault, so these decks are probably going to be performing a little bit slower than, say, a Commander deck. But with all the artifacts that are coming down, you're going to be able to take that extra turn, possibly getting yourself back above your opponent in the long game. Not to mention, that also fuels energy production, which can then be dumped into cards like Deadlock Trap, which is a great cheap way to keep your opponent's big creatures offline. And I'm also trying to run one Multiform Wonder. And that's just a big creature. It's a 5-drop that generates 3 energy when it enters. But it, for 1 energy, you can use a bunch of different abilities, giving it like flying, lifelink, +1, -1, and other type things. So Gonti's Aether Heart definitely allows a lot of energy production with the introduction of any artifact onto the field. So you also want to get cards that'll help you cycle through your deck. So cards like Treasure Map, which will let you scry the top card, as well as turn into a land itself, which will help your land issues, as well as giving you treasure tokens. Also Azor's Gateway. While you may never flip it, it's definitely a great way to dig through your deck to find other cards.
Oh, yeah.
And then this was a little juicy one that I kind of came across, kind of a surprise. Awakened Amalgam. It has power and toughness equal to the different names of lands you control.
Oh, wow.
So every single land in this deck is going to be different. This thing can get stupid. I mean, late game, you can drop it, and it can just be absolutely huge. Also, Animation Module, able to tick up Karn. It can create extra counters on permanents you control. And then also Paradox Engine, one of the larger cards in this deck. Obviously, you know, casting spells to untap permanents, all those mana rocks, you're going to be able to use them again. A lot of vehicles that require very little to crew, like Aethersphere Harvester, Untethered Express, Mirage Mirror.
You wouldn't be running Hope of Ghurrapur, would you?
I am running Hope of Ghurrapur, yes. Maybe I'll try to post this list to see if there's any feedback on it. That you guys can help contribute. But bottom line is, Urza's Tome also is a new card in Dominaria that's going to be great because it says you draw a card and then you either discard a card unless you exile a historic card from your graveyard. Well, guess what? You can probably discard artifact cards. And then if you exile that, you just get to tap 2 and draw a card. So that seems pretty powerful. Other cards like Sorcerer's Spyglass to take down your opponent, to kind of, you know, disrupt what your opponent's doing. Universal Solvent is one of the only removal spells / artifacts that you can run in this deck, seeing as it is colorless, but it will allow you to destroy a permanent, and it does require 7 mana, which means it's going to be a bigger threat later in the game. Throne of the God Pharaoh. We are running vehicles, and Karn will be pumping out artifact creatures, and this is just an extra way to get some extra damage in on your opponent on your end step of your turn, regardless if you have to attack with them or not. It's
man,
really cool.
It sounds like you've got the deck pretty shaped up, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Foundry Inspector, as well as Chief of the Foundry, you know, making all your stuff cheaper. The only real problem, like I said, is the restriction on the mana base. Now, with a couple of these cards able to flip into lands, technically your land count could go up. But you want to keep the cost of your cards down because it'll take you a while to get going. But once you're actually able to play Karn and really start digging through your deck for those cards or making those creatures, it could happen. It could get pretty good. So this was so much fun to do, just to brew. I mean, obviously, I love brewing. That's part of the reason why I love this Brawl format so much. Please stop crapping on it, everybody. I mean, I'm going to build this deck, and I'm going to play it, and I'm going to have fun. So sit
on it. That's good. That's good.
All right. So. Anyway, I had a ton of fun doing this. Greg, was there anything else you wanted to mention before we start to wrap things up here?
Go out there and play some Magic.
Absolutely.
Just go play Magic. I mean, there's no reason to say, oh no, I'm not being included. I don't want to play a game. Don't worry about it. You know, find a good store, find a good group of people. They're out there.
Yep. Yep. Go play absolutely. Magic.
I mean, that's how I met this guy, Sean, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, Metalwork Colossus is also pretty good in this
that
deck.
That seems kind of busted.
Yeah, and Mirage Mirror, too. So.
Well, you have to play Mirage Mirror.
That's yeah, you get to play so many fun cards. Oh, my gosh. So, and Inventor's Fair, you know? Go get anything out of your deck. It's a tutor. Come on. Come on. All right.
So where can they find you?
So when I'm not buying cards from Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where I use the promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save 10% off of my purchase of $10 or more, which help contribute to future show giveaways, you can find me on Twitter at MTG_Sean.
You can find me when I'm not doing those things or something like that on Noobslasher2003 on Twitter.
And the show is at The Win Condition. You can look at us on Instagram at The Win Condition MTG. Check out our YouTube page. And yeah, all that being said.
Oh, there is one more thing I wanted to say.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us for our 52nd episode.
Oh, yeah.
A year.
52 episodes. Yep. 1 year into it. Wow. It has been fun. I've loved doing this. One of the things I really love about this is I'm a very deadline-driven person, and I've done a lot of things creatively, but it's always kind of fizzled out. But this really gives me an opportunity to talk about something I love on a weekly basis and get it out there. And the feedback is wonderful. I love interacting with you guys. So thank you for motivating Greg and myself to keep doing this. We really appreciate it.
We do. We do.
All right. Well.
Alrighty, guys.
All that being said. Stay dry. Greg, thanks again.
No problem.
And we will talk to y'all next week.